Now, in our conversations with unbelievers, we often encounter those who are vehemently atheistic. They are people who do not believe in God, refuse to believe in God in spite of all the evidence that one might show, in spite of the philosophical implications and in spite of the spiritual matters at hand. The atheists will not believe in God. One of the reasons I find in my conversations with atheists is that they refuse to believe in God is because what they see is an inconsistency in the way that God presents himself. God can present himself on the one hand as a God of peace in Romans chapter 15, verse 33, and yet in many other passages, such as Exodus 15 and verse 3, the Lord is a man of war, the Lord is his name. So which is it? Which is it? Is God a God of peace, or is God the God of war? Which is it? Is he the God who tenderly extends his hand to mankind in mercy and grace, who lovingly offers forgiveness and guidance in moral matters? Or is he the God who destroys the Amalekites, every man, woman, and child and beast of that people? Is he the God that brings the 10 plagues on the Egyptians, who destroys their armies in the waters of the Red Sea? Is he the God who endorses violence, seemingly from cover to cover in the Bible? Or is he the God who claims to be a peaceful God? Which one is the true God? Now, we see where the problem comes. And I can certainly understand why an atheist might take this issue with God and his nature. Because in the name of religion, for supposedly the cause of God, a great deal of violence has been done in human history. According to the Pew Research Center, 65% of Americans actually believe that religion plays a significant role in most wars and conflicts around the world. According to a poll by Newsweek, although back in 2007, though I'm sure the numbers are either the same or even more significant now, Americans are basically split over whether religion plays too big a role or too small a role on American politics and policy decisions. I think that the impression that a lot of atheists have about religion in general, and of course they'll make religion into this great monolithic term that encompasses all world religions. Oh, religion is the problem. God is the problem. Well, you're using some very, very broad terms there, unfortunately. But I think that the impression that a lot of unbelievers have about religion is that religion just kind of incites violent passions in people. Well, how can you argue with that? Turn on the news every single day and you see the way that Iraq is falling to pieces right now. They're falling to pieces over Islamic sectarianism, basically. Oh, you've got Sunnis and Shia. You've got Kurds in another part of Iraq trying to stay out of the whole thing. And they're all fighting over it because of Sharia law. Because 1,000 years ago, somebody made a mistake. Somebody said something wrong. Somebody was a heretic, and we're still fighting the same battles over and over and over again. People don't talk to each other because of religion. Isn't that right? You know how it is when you meet somebody in public. There's 2 rules, right? Don't talk about religion. Don't talk about politics. I was on an airplane yesterday. Isn't that the rule? When you sit down, you're supposed to say, oh, what do you do for a living? Oh, okay. Oh, that's really nice. Are you a Cardinals fan? Oh, too bad for you. You're supposed to keep it friendly. You're supposed to keep it friendly. Of course, the convenient thing, I'll give you a little insight here. The convenient thing about being a preacher is there's no way of keeping religion out of the conversation because you're like, oh, you're in international trade. Oh, that's interesting. Well, I'm a preacher. People don't know what to do with that. The guy I was sitting next to on the airplane yesterday, you know, he's in trade and business and all that sort of thing, all the things that I don't understand about life. And he explained what he did to me, and I just kind of glazed over and said, oh, that sounds interesting. And he asked what I decided, well, I'm a preacher. And he was like, well, my wife's adopted parents were missionaries. And they're like, see, I can talk to you. You know, but let's kind of look at this idea here of the idea of religion and violence here. Let's think about some of the reasons here, because any objective person can acknowledge that in the name of religion, or in the name of a God, great atrocities have occurred. And Christianity, I use it in the broadest sense of the term, certainly doesn't have clean hands itself. You can look in the Old Testament. There's battles throughout the Old Testament, which many liberal scholars would label as nothing more than ethnic cleansing. That would be today's terminology for it. How about the Wars of the Maccabees in the intertestamental period, the Jewish revolts against Roman power in the centuries before and after 1st century A.D.? Those were all in the pretext of religion. How about the Crusades? The Crusades were a series of Middle Age wars over the Holy Land. Though, really, it was a lot more than just Holy Land. It was about land and money more than anything else. How about the Inquisition? The Inquisition was a legal system utilized by the Roman Catholic Church during the medieval and early modern eras to investigate and punish those who they believed were practicing heresies. Really, if you look at Inquisition history, it's really pretty a shameful thing. Church-sanctioned torture, for example, was established in 1252, and by the late 15th century, an Inquisition in Spain resulted in the deadliest and most horrific of all the Inquisitions. There are really untold thousands of people who were tortured to death over accusations of witchcraft and adultery and heretical views on doctrine and theology. Even many of our modern wars, like I alluded to, Iraq, for example, are under the pretext of religion. And many atheists will look at what happens in the world in the name of God and they'll say, right there is point number one, reason numero uno, why I don't believe in God. One writer put it really well in summing up, as always, atheists take any statistics that show the underbelly of religion and then push these numbers to the extremes. The role of religion in inciting global violence remains their numero uno reason why religion must be abolished. In their minds, should religion be allowed to continue, civilization as we know it will cease to exist. So, in this lesson, what I want to do is confront some of the accusations against religion, God specifically, Christianity, and the role that religion plays in the violent affairs and activities of humanity. So let's start with this point, which I think is a very strong point and hard to refute. Violence is a human thing, not a religion thing. According to one writer in a book called No God But God, Reza Aslan says, religion doesn't make people bigots. People are bigots and they use religion to justify their ideology. I thought that was a really good way of putting it. Because really, it's not just religion, right? Don't people become bigots over a lot of things? Aren't people violent over a great many things? People are very violent because of oil, aren't they? The rights to oil, the production of oil, the sale of oil, the shipping of oil. We kill all kinds of people because of oil. So does that mean that oil itself is evil? Or does that mean that I don't believe in oil because oil just causes all kinds of violence in the world? There's all kinds of reasons people are violent. But religion is not the cause of violence. Being human is the cause of violence. And if anything, I think the Christian explanation, which the atheist would never accept, of course, but the Christian explanation is when you reject God's true religion, that's what causes violence. When you do practice things that are false doctrine and heresy, sure, that might lead a person to become very, very violent. False religions, false gods, the absence of God's moral compass in ethical and social problems of the world. The Christian explanation is maybe if more people would become Christians, we might be able to practice the Sermon on the Mount a little bit better. And if you practice the Sermon on the Mount, there's no way you won't get along with everybody around you. Of course, the atheist would just brush that aside easily, quickly. But I think it's a point that you can't make go away. Violence is not a religion thing. Violence is a human thing. Ever since Cain slew his younger brother in Genesis chapter 4 and verse 8, people have been killing each other for all kinds of reasons. Go to most any museum. Go over to the museum in Mesa. Go to the museum in Phoenix. Any historical museum that you go to is going to have evidence replete throughout the museum of the violence that people do to each other. More often than not, it's not because of religion that people kill each other. Not only that, but I think that atheism doesn't exactly have its hands clean when it comes to violence in the name of its cause also. Let's kind of consider a couple things. When you look at some of the great movements, just in the 20th century alone, history really doesn't look that favorably on movements that are devoid of God, or at least a Christian moral compass. Joseph Stalin, for example, Joseph Stalin was a passionate atheist, according to one writer, who murdered untold numbers of Christians, clergy and laity alike. He destroyed virtually every church in Russia and forced Soviet students to study scientific atheism. In his reign of terror, you would think that there would be an ideal opportunity to show what culture would look like without God. You know what a culture looks like without God is 13 million people killed under Joseph Stalin. How about Mao, the Chinese dictator during the country's great cultural revolution after the Second World War? There were untold millions killed under Mao for beliefs that were not sanctioned by his Communist Party. How about Pol Pot? Pol Pot ravaged the Southeast Asian jungles to the tune of 1.5 million people in Cambodia. Kim Il-sung of North Korea, he was killing millions of people long before his son ever showed up. Add to that Brezhnev, Lenin, Castro. And if you're conservative with it, the death toll directly from atheistic pursuits in the 20th century alone surpasses the total death toll from all of those wars that we mentioned earlier, the Spanish Inquisition, the Crusades. Hold on a second. This is where the atheist goes, gotcha. The atheist is going to listen to this conversation. If you go down the Pol Pot, Joseph Stalin line, the atheist is going to go, gotcha. Ha, 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 ha. The atheist does not accept the Joseph Stalin Pol Pot argument. You should just be aware of that. So if you're going to make that argument with an atheist, just make yourself fully aware that they will instantly brush it aside by saying, yes, but Joseph Stalin, Mao, Pol Pot, Castro, they were committing those atrocities and those acts of violence not because of a religion, but because of a political system. They were doing those things not in the name of a god or something imaginary or a fantasy land called heaven. They were doing it because of social pressure, because of social situations, because of political motives. Or, like Pol Pot, I think Pol Pot was mostly just insane. So the atheist will immediately brush those things aside. Here's the issue that I have with that, though. Any dogma or belief system can be abused. And Joseph Stalin and Pol Pot and Mao and all those others prove that. I don't know. I know. We're all good old-fashioned Americans here, I'm sure. So, I don't know. Is communism necessarily evil in every context? I don't know. Who cares? But can you take communism and use it to destroy people? Sure. Can you take democracy and abuse it and use it to destroy people? Of course you can. Can you take capitalism, twist it all around, abuse it till it's blue in the face, and use capitalism to destroy or hurt people? Of course you can. Of course you can. People have been trying to monopolize each other for centuries now. Any dogma or belief system can be abused. So the thing I would tell the atheist is, assuming something about an entire class of people based on isolated examples is simply not acceptable. So I agree. Let's toss out the Joseph Stalin, Mao, Pol Pot argument. I'm fine with that. I don't believe in God because Joseph Stalin killed 13 million people. That's not why I believe in God. But if you want me to throw out atheists who committed tremendous atrocities in the name of their belief system, then please throw out the Crusades and the Inquisition and the Salem witch hunts from our conversations. It's not God itself. It's not religion itself. It's not Christianity itself that's the problem. Will the atheist accept this and be consistent about it? Then the atheist will typically pull out the Bible itself and say, well, I'm going to use your own book against you. I'm going to use your own book against you. Because what about all that God-sanctioned killing in the Old Testament? And I'll admit, sometimes it's hard to stomach what you read in the Old Testament. You know, if you're not a violent person, sure, reading the Old Testament can be a bit jarring. It's a hard book to read. A lot of violence in there. If they made a movie about it, they'd have to make it rated R. It is hard to ignore the Old Testament and its bloody account of the early history of God's people. Jericho, Joshua chapter 6, verse 21. There are 12,000 killed at Ai, Joshua 8, verse 25. The Amorites, God actually held the sun still for a day, if you recall in Joshua chapter 10, to facilitate the violence of that day. There are gory and violent adventures of judges like Ehud, Gideon, and Samson. How about the total annihilation of the Amalekites in 1 Samuel chapter 15? And you could really make the list go on and on and on of all the times that God sanctioned killing categorically in the Old Testament. Many atheists and skeptics point to these as impossible stories to reconcile with a God who we claim as Christians is merciful, kind, and loving. Oftentimes what the atheist will say is, I don't want to believe in a God who would kill babies. Of course, what people fail to realize is a few implications. Maybe context would help a little bit. First of all, let's look at a couple things here as far as context goes. First of all, when you read about the violence that occurs in the Old Testament, most of the Bible's military history takes place in very, very short time spans. You know, when you read the book of Joshua, for example, the wars of Joshua might have lasted less than 5 years. Less than 5 years. It took less than 5 years to conquer the land of Canaan. So even though the book of Joshua is itself a book filled with violence, it is nevertheless a book that covers a very short and specific span of human history. Israel's history covers at least a span of 500 years from Joshua to the beginning of the Babylonian captivity. Again, from Joshua to Babylon is 500 years of human history. Now, the United States has existed for a little over 200 years. What if we were to take the condensed version of U.S. history, put it onto a few pages? We would have a pretty violent history ourselves, wouldn't we? If you looked at the history of the United States in 200 years, and all you saw was the Revolutionary War, and then you scoot on that, and you're going to find yourself in the War of 1812. Go a little bit further, and you're going to find the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, and the war with Mexico, and then you're going to, oh, that's World War I and World War II and Korea and Vietnam and Iraq again and Afghanistan and probably Iraq again in another 6 months. If you looked at 200 years of U.S. history in a condensed version, you'd probably think, what a violent people! Now, Israel had 500 years. And we are getting the Reader's Digest version of 500 years of human history. So yes, I'll acknowledge the Old Testament seems to be a very violent book. But that's the Reader's Digest of a 500-year history of a people. Most of the time, the violence that you read in the Old Testament was in short spurts. Again, like Joshua, less than 5 years of warfare, followed by long years of peace and quiet. Read the Judges sometime. Most of the things that the Judges do in the book of Judges might have taken a couple months at most. How long was Samson alive? Maybe a few years. But on either side of Samson, you have decades of peace. You have decades of at least quiet captivity. Short spurts of violence does not a violent people make. And I think we need to acknowledge that even in our own U.S. history. We also need to be careful where our sympathies are directed. So many atheists will decry the Bible for its depiction of warfare And yet they fail to realize the severity of the sins committed by those people who were destroyed by Israel or by God. You know, maybe instead of feeling sorry for the Amalekites, we should see that their history is colored with child sacrifice, burning their kids alive on altars, bloodthirsty conquest of their neighbors, immorality beyond comparison. And maybe instead of feeling bad about the Amalekites, we should acknowledge that God is a God of justice. That when God sees people doing evil things, he cannot tolerate it. Maybe that's the problem with our society today, is we see people doing evil things, and we do tolerate it. We do put up with it. We ignore it. We allow it to happen. I would rather look up to a God who is an ultimately just God than a God who just simply doesn't care or who is indifferent to the evils and injustices of this world. The Philistines, the Egyptians, the Moabites, these were all decadent, violent, abusive, slovenly, backward-thinking cultures. When God asked the Israelites to eliminate these cultures from the earth, it was exactly because of their immoral and destructive influence. Go to Deuteronomy chapter 20. Notice in Deuteronomy 20, beginning in verse 17, this is why God asked them to destroy these people. You shall utterly destroy them, God says, as the Lord your God has commanded you, so that they may not teach you to do according to all of their detestable things which they have done for their gods, so that you would sin against the Lord your God. I mean, really, let's lay it out there. Even the atheist has to acknowledge something. If your options are, allow the Amalekites to continue being your next door neighbors, and possibly be influenced to commit child sacrifice in your backyard, or destroy the Amalekites utterly and totally so that child sacrifice would be abolished. The atheist does not put things into context here. They simply don't understand the grossness of the atrocities committed by all of these people that God asked the Israelites to destroy, that God himself destroyed in that context. And I would ask the skeptic or the unbeliever or the Bible basher, I would ask him some honest questions. Doesn't even an atheist believe that war is a necessary tool in dealing with rogue nations that disregard human rights? Why is God a villain for annihilating that which is detestable from the earth? Why is that such a bad thing when God asks that a bad people be punished for their bad deeds? I guess I just don't understand what the issue is. Last point that we'll make. Let's ask the question. So is Christianity a religion of peace? Our God is clearly a God who employs violence within certain contexts. So how can we possibly claim, with all consistency at least, to be a religion of peace? It's very easy to point at the excesses and abuses by church-like institutions and proclaim that religion is the problem. Right? Look at what the Catholic Church has done for 2,000 years now or so. And you can blame a pseudo-church institution, put it all on religion itself or God himself or Christ himself or the Bible itself. And that's a very cheap and easy argument to make. It's almost like looking at when you got the compounds out in the middle of the wilderness, strange fundamentalist compounds that they're stockpiling guns and cans of beans and stuff for the apocalypse. And that's religion right there. So you're taking the fringe groups and you are making an assumption about everybody based on what the 0.1% of people do. You're taking the fringe group and applying that to all Christians. I'm sorry, I don't have to accept responsibility for what the Catholic Church did 500 years ago. I don't care what the atheist says. I am not responsible for what the Catholic Church did in the Inquisition. I am not responsible for the Salem witch hunts. I am not responsible for the Crusades. Just as much as I am not responsible for some crazy fundamentalist sect in the middle of nowhere. I'm not responsible for what pseudo-church and fringe groups do. I'm not responsible for them. because that is not Christianity. The Spanish Inquisition is not Christianity. The Salem witch hunt was not Christianity. Like the way that Jesus puts it in Matthew chapter 5. You want to know what Christianity is? Pull out the source material. Stop assuming that Christianity is what bad Christians are and start looking at the source material of what Christianity is supposed to be. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye in Matthew 5 verse 38 and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist him who is evil. Whoever slaps you on your cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat also. Whoever shall force you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Jesus goes on to say, near the end of the chapter, I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Clearly, Jesus is not saying that we should be the doormats of the world, because Jesus himself did defend himself at different times. John 18, verse 23, for example. And he did turn tables over and whip people for excess and abuse. John chapter 2, verses 13 through 17. But he did teach his disciples that it would be their words and their faith that separated them from the unbelievers around them. What did he say in John chapter 13? How will you know who the true disciples are? Who are the true disciples of Christ? In John chapter 13, beginning in verse 31. John chapter 13, verse 31. Now, therefore, when he had gone out, Jesus said, now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself, and will glorify him immediately. Little children, I am with you a little while longer. You shall seek me. And as I said to the Jews, I now say to you also, where I am going, you cannot come. There's something different about the followers of Christ than the people of the world. You notice that Jesus is saying all this right after Judas leaves the room. The one with evil in his heart leaves the room, and Jesus immediately starts talking about a new commandment that I give to you. That you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. If you're not loving, you're not a Christian. If you're not loving, you are not his disciple. And I don't care what badge you wear. I don't care what title you put on. I don't care what sign is in front of your church building. I don't care in whose name you commit some act of violence, atrocities galore. If you are not loving, you're not a disciple of Christ. Even when war is prescribed in the New Testament, it's always used allegorically. In John chapter 18, verse 36, Jesus makes it very clear that his kingdom is not of this world. He said, if my kingdom was of this world, my disciples would rise up and they would defend me and they'd rescue me from you. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this world. 2 Corinthians 10, beginning in verse 3, for the weapons of our warfare are not of flesh, but are divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses. We are destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God. As Sloan read earlier in Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 through 17, the armor of God, sure, we're fighting a war, sure, we're putting armor on, but the armor is not literal armor, it's not physical armor. We're putting on things like faith, salvation, the Word of God, trusting and hoping and loving. We fight our warfare by being merciful as He was merciful, by loving as He loved. All of those previous examples that we mentioned of religion being used as a pretense or a pretext for violence all have one thing in common. It's not Christianity in its truest form. Atheists forget that there are many factors that play into human violence. The atheist finds it very convenient that he can pin violence onto religion simply because religion happens to be a commonality between a lot of these things. Take the Crusades, for example. I think it's a very lazy assessment of the Crusades to say that was wars fought for religion, Christians versus Muslims. Now, that's a really sloppy way to summarize the Crusades. When you really dig into it, it wasn't about religion. It's about land. It's about titles. It was about power, political power, social power. It was about running countries and making money. Sure, it's easy to pin violence on Zionists. All these wars today that we're fighting in the Middle East, it's all because of Zionists, because of Israel. Okay, that's easy to say. Is it as much about Israel and Zionism as it is about oil? I'm not being cynical here. I don't think I'm being cynical, at least. But really, is it about Zionism and Israel, or is it just about oil in the Middle East? I mean, come on. We forget that if we're just going to be lazy and sloppy and say that religion is the cause of all violence in the world, I just think you're missing the fact that violence is a complicated thing, and there are a lot of reasons why people are violent. Let's finish up in Colossians 3 and verse 5. We'll wrap things up here in Colossians 3 and verse 5. Consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. You think that more violence has been done for the cause of those things than for God? I think more people get killed because of greed and immorality and evil desire than they do because of God. Verse 6, for it is on account of these things that the wrath of God will come. And in them you also once walked when you were living in them, but now you also put them all aside, anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive speech from your mouth. The Christian gets rid of all the reasons why violence happens. Violence happens because people get angry with each other, because they abuse each other, because there's malice, jealousy, greed, abuse. When the Christian eliminates those things from his life, he also eliminates the possibility of personal revenge. The Christian eliminates the possibility of being a violent, angry person. Take away those attitudes and you take away the violence. Don't lie to one another, he says in verse 11, since you laid aside the old self with its evil practices and have put on the new self who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. A renewal, he says in verse 11, in which there is no distinction between Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave and freeman, because Christ is all and in all. Now, maybe you've been a skeptic. Maybe you've had a hard time accepting things from the Bible that you've read. Maybe you have seen violence as a reason to abandon God, forsake Him, or ignore Him altogether. Well, I am telling you that you are basing that opinion on misinformation. Really study the Bible. That's my invitation to you. That is my encouragement to you. Find out who God really is, not what skeptics claim He is. Now, if you're not a Christian here this morning, you really ought to be. This is your opportunity to make that need known, to obey the gospel. As Jesus very clearly put it in Mark 16, verse 16, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. So I tell you, whatever need you might have, please come forward as we stand and sing.